My name is David again, and this is June. And we are medical students from Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. And we're happy to have the opportunity today to tell you about our research done last summer at the Comprehensive Rural Health Project, looking at their community-based primary healthcare approach to the control of tuberculosis. We'd like to start by stating we have no relationships to disclose. So in this presentation, we would like to first recognize CRHP, or Comprehensive Rural Health Project, as an example of community-based primary health care. Then we would like to analyze the central role played by the village health workers in CRHP's TB control and CRHP's effects on TB incidence rates. And finally, discuss the application of the CRHP model to other community settings. So community-based primary health care embodies the idea that we can improve health for all by empowering communities to take control of their own situation in an integrated and self-determined manner. CRHP was founded on the principles of equity, empowerment, and integration in 1970 by Drs. Maybell and Raj Aroli, and they have taken this grassroots, bottoms-up approach to improving the lives and health of rural villagers in Jamkhed, India, in the state of Maharashtra. For example, CRHP partners with these villages on programs in primary health care. Here we see a village health worker weighing a newborn to track their growth and development. They also partner on community organization and education. Here, CRHP field staff meet with women's self-help group members. These groups form to pull their resources together, apply for government loans, and engage in income generation projects. Along those lines, here we see representatives from 100 different women's self-help groups congregate at CRHP to hear a government loan officer tell them about opportunities available to them. In addition, they engage in agricultural environmental enhancement projects. Here is the plant nursery at CRHP's demonstration farm, where they implement sustainable and cost-effective technologies such as earthworm-based fertilizer production and teach them to farmers and villagers in the region. So the CRHP model is built on three legs, the first being the project villages themselves, as represented by community groups such as the women's self-help groups. The second leg is the mobile health team of nurses, social workers, and paramedical workers who regularly travel out to each village. And the third is the CRHP hospital, which provides inpatient and outpatient medical and surgical care that could not be offered in the village setting. These three are joined in the middle by the village health worker who facilitates the collaboration of efforts between all three. These village health workers are women, often middle-aged and illiterate, who are selected from their community as volunteers to receive CRHP training in the provision of primary health care, in organizing communities, and in personal development and communication skills. On the top photo, we see senior village health workers teaching junior ones about different health topics. And at the bottom is an example of a village health worker screening pregnant women for preeclampsia.
Hi, everyone. So the purpose of our study was to look at the effectiveness of the CRHP model in affecting health outcomes. We chose to look at CRHP's tuberculosis control program as a reflection of CRHP's overall effect. And we chose to look at TB because it is a major burden of disease in India and many other developing countries. According to the World Health Organization, India has the highest annual TB total case incidence in the world in 2008. Also, because TB control requires a well-developed system of detection and long-term uninterrupted treatment, and measures of TB incidence can be used to evaluate the performance of a public health system. In CRHP's TB control program, the village health workers were trained to detect possible TB cases by pulmonary TB symptoms, such as productive cough or fever. These potential cases are then referred to the CRHP hospital, where a doctor looks at the patient's presentation of TB and the chest x-ray to confirm the diagnosis. Once the diagnosis is confirmed, the patient is started on a multi-drug treatment at their house. The village health workers then visit the patients at their house to provide education, resupply the medicine, and monitor the treatment adherence. Our study consists of two components, the survey component and the quantitative analysis component. The survey component has the patient survey and the village health worker survey. For the patient survey, we interviewed past and present TB patients in the project villages. And it consists of three sections, which were the economic status of the patient, their presentation of TB, and the treatment that they received. For the village health worker survey, we interview current village health workers, and the survey consists of four sections, which was the extent of training that they received, their method of TB detection, patient education, and their method of treatment follow-up. The second component, which was the quantitative analysis component, reviewed TB incidence rates in project villages from 1973 to 2007. We then compared the TB incidence rates in these project villages in 2000, 2002, and 2004 to 2007 to control statistics using a two-sample t-test. These control statistics were collected by the India Revised National TB Control Program, and there were in TB incidence rates from the rural region of the Maharashtra state, all Maharashtra, and Indian national TB incidence rates. For the patient survey, we interviewed eight patients, and 62.5% of the patients reported that they had to stop working because of their TB illness. All of them received free medication from CRHP, and all of them received regular visits from the village health worker. For the village health worker survey, we interviewed five village health workers. The village health workers that we talked to have worked as village health workers for an average of 9.2 years. All of them attend training sessions weekly at the CRHP hospital. They reported that the symptoms and signs that they used to detect TB were cough that lasts more than 10 days, fever, weight loss, loss of appetite, and fatigue. The village health workers educated the patients about the signs and symptoms of TB and also teach them how to prevent further infection by covering their cough or collecting their sputum in a jar mixed with ash. All of them reported that they make regular visits to the patients during their treatment course. For the quantitative analysis results, figure 2 shows the average TB incidence rates in project villages, which is the blue line, and the number of project villages, which is the purple line. This is from 1973 to 2007. The elevation in average TB incidence rates from 1982 to 1984 possibly reflects the increasing overall TB detection as the new villages joins the RHP during this period. As the number of project villages stabilize over time, the incidence rates decrease, possibly suggesting the establishment of effective CRHP TB control program within these new villages. However, the peak could also reflect an acute TB outbreak in this region, and lack of control data during this period of time prevents us from differentiating between these two possibilities. Figure 1 shows the average TB incidence rates of CRHP villages compared to control statistics from 2000 to 2007. Based on our t-test results, the average TB incidence rates in project villages, which is the blue line, were significantly lower than all the control statistics that we looked at, which were the orange, the purple, and the green line. This was significant at 95% confidence interval for every year except for 2006, which was significant at 90% confidence interval.
So we hope that our quantitative results provide some support that CRHP's TB control program is an effective one. And our question is really, how is that done? We believe the answer and the credit really belongs to the village health workers and the central role they play in CRHP's community-based model. These village health workers are able to provide more access to patients in their communities, are able to conduct a more sensitive detection of cases, and can better monitor TB patients undergoing treatment. These village health workers are first community members. They live in the villages where they work. So as such, they do know what's going on in the village best. This combined with their training by CRHP to detect signs and symptoms of pulmonary TB make them especially sensitive detectors for suspected cases, who are then referred to CRHP hospital for confirmation of diagnosis. In addition, they play a vital role in the education of patients and their families about the effects of TB, how it's transmitted, and the importance of adhering to the full treatment course in order to be cured. In addition, because they live in the village, they are able to visit all the patients regularly and make sure they are taking their treatments and assess whether they need additional support to aid in their recovery. CRHP's strategy is a comprehensive one that looks much beyond just a clinical treatment and cure of disease. As we saw in our patient surveys, majority of the patients indicated that they were unable to work when they were sick with TB. As a result, this economic impact cannot be ignored while treating the patient. In line with CRHP's overall philosophy, they scale the patient's ability to pay. They scale out-of-pocket payments to the patient's ability to pay. And all the patients we spoke with all received fully subsidized medications. CRHP, along with the village health workers, also provide family, patient, and community-wide counseling and education as to the importance of TB control and adherence to treatment, and also do a lot to remove the stigmatization of having TB from in the villages. In addition, they step in to provide additional social and economic support when needed. One case in particular, one patient we spoke to really highlighted this. When she came down with TB, she was in an exceptionally poor socioeconomic situation and received not only full treatment, but also food aid in wheat, employment on CRHP's farm, and also a loan from her woman's self-help group in her village. And with all this, she recovered fully, was able to buy goats to generate income and also build a house for her and her family to live in, which is a step up from the straw hut she was in before. Some limitations of her study include not having comparable control statistics before 2000, which limit the analysis we could have done over the three decades of data that we had. And in addition, our survey size and scope of question asked was quite limited due to logistical constraints. At this point, I'd just like to quickly talk about a couple of applications of the CRHP model from a very long list. In 1994, village health workers and CRHP field staff traveled to the Bandhadara region of Maharashtra, which is a mountainous region where many tribal communities live. In India, the tribal communities are among the most neglected and underserved populations in society. So these village health workers applied the CRHP model to engage that community and help them assess their own situation and implement projects that would improve their own health and development. Andhra Pradesh, the Indian state of Andhra Pradesh, seeing the success at Jamket in Bandhadara, is now collaborating with CRHP through the Society for Elimination of Rural Poverty to train thousands of its community health workers and community organizers in CRHP's model and philosophy. And then they can then apply these strategies to their own communities in Andhra Pradesh. CRHP is also a major training center for hundreds and thousands of NGO workers, health professionals, and students such as us who go through. So these participants will then take the principles that they learn and apply it to their own situations and organizations. One such person founded ASHA in 1998 to serve the urban poor in the slums of Delhi and has done great success using the community-based approach. Another is the director of the Karen Department of Health and Welfare based in eastern Burma and is now applying the CRHP model to implement a village health worker program for communities that are affected by active military conflict and constant instability. So in summary, we would just like to reiterate that CRHP is a prime example of community-based primary health care because their village health workers play a central and vital role. Our quantitative evidence provides support that CRHP's TB control program is effective as a reflection of their overall strategy. And we believe this is applicable to many different community settings. We'd just like to acknowledge our co-authors, everyone at CRHP Jamked, Mount Sinai Global Health Center, the Rosenbluth Foundation, and Dr. Sirgahan and Andrew Chow for their help. And if you'd like more information, you can visit CRHP's website at jamked.org. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This concludes our tour around the world. We have about 10 minutes for questions. So, who has a question? Yes.
Oh, sure. Okay. So the question is, would doing MODS on all HIV-infected people in Peru be a viable strategy prior to initiating isoniazid preventative therapy? So should we do MODS for everybody? MODS is actually accepted by the Peruvian government as being a valid means of detecting tuberculosis, just like a solid phase culture. The problem right now with MODS is scale-up. You require laboratory technicians to read each one of these tests, and there's an article from 2006 November New England Journal of Medicine by Dave Moore, and he talked about some of the limitations. And one of the limitations is, for every lab tech, they can really only process about I think around 3,000-4,000 samples per year. So that's a big limitation. It's especially a big limitation when you're trying to do it in places like South Africa, where you're trying to process tens of thousands of samples a week sometimes in certain areas. So the problem we're running into right now is scale up, and that's kind of the wall we're trying to deal with.
And one other question for Mr. Radwell.
I think it's going to depend totally where you are. You know, it's not going to be any, I don't think it's going to help you at all if you're in the middle of Kansas, for example. It's possible that, you know, when we first started seeing these results, we thought that maybe this is a hidden, something that's hidden in all tuberculosis, and that maybe we do need some sort of broader recommendations for maybe tuberculosis diagnosis in children. But I think the later study that came out just fairly recently from the CDC showing that it's less than 1.4% in the rest of the US, I think this is something that is really something that's tailored to an individual area where the problem is known to occur. So for example here, yes, I do think it matters, and I think it should be taken into account, and specifically for the diagnosis of children. Unfortunately, the easy answer is basically going off to lymph nodes for diagnosis. And they've done a lot more of that here because of the kind of getting these kind of results. But that's a very basic procedure, and most people would not be willing to do it. So it's going to always be very, very difficult to diagnose if you're not actually going to be willing to go in after those lymph nodes, basically, with fine needle aspiration, things like that.
What about an NAA test or some test that doesn't rely on a chest X-ray or screening?
Any other test that, you know, basically the only way you're going to know it's bovis, for example, is you're going to have to find, you have to have a culture. You have to have a culture to get a species. So there's no way to know it's bovis. Now, just whether or not they have TB, you know, thinking that, well, if the kids here may show up slightly differently, I think that's the kind of thing where you look at things like the logistic regression, looking at the risk factors to say, does this kid fall into this risk group? And I think if the kid falls into the risk group, you've got to be a little more aggressive about being things you go after. If they don't have any signs, if they don't have any lymph node swelling, but they're still, you know, losing weight, fever, et cetera, the usual, you know, constitutional type symptoms, unfortunately, it just, what it would mean for me is it has to go higher up in the differential if you live in an area that's known to be at risk. And if you've got a kid here and he's got TB, at 45%, I'd want to make darn sure I ruled out bovis because it's resistant to pyrazinamide.
Gentleman on the aisle.
I have a question for Dr. Murphy. For the 4.2% you say the infected that you found, did you look for active TB? Did you follow up with them?
Yeah, so the question was there active TB in 4.2% of our cases that had symptoms of TB? We did do HIV testing on everybody, and we didn't find that there was any more active TB in those than we did in the other individuals. Part of that, we think, is that the HIV epidemic in Baja is fairly recent. And so there are AIDS cases in Baja, but it's not necessarily reflective of the prevalence of HIV infection. So it might be that it's still fairly early. A lot of people are HIV infected, but they haven't gone on to develop AIDS and have low CD4 counts yet. And so we may not be seeing the amount of reactivation among the HIV cases that we may see in the future.
Were you using cultures to test for active TB?
No, actually what we were doing was using the system that was currently available in Baja. There are cultures available, but they're very expensive. And so the government of Mexico utilizes the WHO recommended procedures, which is to do sputum smears with microscopy. Which is essentially looking for the individuals that have the highest burden of bacillus in their sputum, i.e. the most infectious, and get those people completely treated so that they're cured. And they figure that it's cheap and it's effective in getting the majority of the cases. Cultures aren't that widely available, and so we were just using the sputums.
Other questions? Well, thank you very much to all of the panel, and I appreciate your being on time, too. Everybody was just on the minute. Yeah. There was a 15 minutes. Great. Thank you so much. You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
I hope I didn't get your name terribly wrong.
No, it's great.
I've been practicing. Thank you. Hope you'll be coming to the International Health Section Special Hour at 6.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to meet you.
Yeah. symptomatic. You can't rely on the symptoms. Every time they try to do like these scores, like they're all the sensitivities around like 50%. Specificities are really junk. But that being said, if you don't even, you know, all you have is a chest X-ray and a clinical exam, you want to do something. One of the things with MODS right now is just scaling it up. People want it, but how do you?
How come the results? System suggesting that there's really no impressive change in the TV evidence. If it's only set, who's a intervention to
success? Yeah. Well, one reason is how you're defining success. If you're using the same tool to define it as you are, you know, to screen the self-fulfilling prophecy. So the current standard is, you know, solid state media culture. That's as close as we have to a gold standard, but it's not that golden. No. But so they don't have a gold, so they're not really comparing it. That's a little bit of a.
And if they said they've got this great system going that's going to make it better, then they can make it better just because it's all
Yeah, well, the other side is that people who are, like, you know, raging, like, you know, TB coughing up a lung, I mean, you're going to get those people, and those are probably the more infected, those, I mean, those certainly
well,
more infected people.
Well, they're just picking off the severe end of the spectrum,
yeah.
And that's important in terms of
Yes, but you're never, I mean, you're going to reach a threshold, you're not going to be able to get it below that threshold. Because I mean, most people with tuberculosis aren't coughing up lung a lot. Even like the active people, like I said, you know, even if you have, hemoptysis and fevers and night sweats for greater than 2 weeks and weight loss and all that stuff, I mean, no matter how you combine them, you're going to catch 50%. But then you're going to overtreat so many more people. So one of the next studies is cost effectiveness analysis of MODS compared to these other things, because when you can break, because it costs a lot to treat these people, and those are some costs you can.
And the drug resistance issues. And
yes.
My other question. Of course, you don't have any idea about having drug resistance.
Well, but it'll take you a year to figure out if you have clinical failure. And that's assuming that I even had TB to begin with.
Exactly.
So when you're over-diagnosing, so I ran into the same issue.
Well, I didn't want to get up and jump.
Oh, no.
I slept through part of what they were doing, but I was hoping you'd jump off of me.
It would basically amount to like you'd ask questions, but they wouldn't have the answers to.
So tell me about your first name.
So this was his over a year project, and he came back, and I sat down.